You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Again, for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have R.L. Mazes on the show with me today. She has a phenomenal new book. It's called Other People's Pets. And when you're hearing this episode, it's available everywhere now. There's links to it in the show notes. Welcome to the show, R.L.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. We begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
So I've been a storyteller for as long as I can remember. When I was a kid, I had this green, gelatinous, alien-like doll. And I would tell myself stories about this doll. And I had a lot of cousins. I grew up with a lot of cousins, and I would tell my cousins stories about this doll. And they would be space adventures and just all kinds of stories. So that was one memory I have about certainly telling stories. And then another memory that I have is, this is really weird, but I wrote newsletters. I mean, as a kid, I wrote newsletters. So I wrote newsletters about my neighborhood, and then I went to camp one summer, and I wrote a newsletter about the camp. And so these were, I guess, nonfiction, I suppose, and maybe a strange thing for a kid to be doing. I think some people thought it was strange that that was something that I was doing, but I just like telling the stories of the neighborhood or the stories of what was going on in camp. So
you were kind of the neighborhood reporter, as it were.
Yeah.
I love it. During this time and where, you know, you're obviously a different kind of person who notices things and likes to record them and you know, put your perception and your spin on them, if you will. Were there ever any grown-ups around you that recognized this thing in you, maybe a parent, maybe a teacher, who saw this storytelling gene coming to life?
Well, so, I mean, unfortunately, like when it came to the camp one, they let me do it. And this will, I'm going to disclose my age here a little bit. So, you know, it was mimeographed, right? They let me do this, this newsletter, and they mimeographed it to hand out in the dining hall, the cafeteria. But there was still a little bit of an attitude of, that it was kind of weird and that, that I was kind of weird for doing it. And so that wasn't necessarily, I mean, I was compelled to do it, and they, as I said, they supported it in the way of mimeographing it. But other times I did get more positive reinforcement for it. I wrote a poem when I was in fourth grade that got published in a book of children's poems. And my father was so proud of that, that any time guests would come over, he would have me recite that poem. And we were four girls. We were four sisters. So for me to be able to stand out in any way or get attention for something that was uniquely about me or from my father especially, who wasn't around that much, and when he was around, his head was kind of in a book. So that was a lot of positive reinforcement for writing.
When you finished school, got ready to go to college, start thinking about life, what did life look like for you? And did writing factor into what you thought your future would look like?
Yes. And, you know, I took writing classes I started at Barnard, and I'll say started because you'll find out in a minute that I dropped out, but I started at Barnard and I did take writing classes, and I remember handing in, you know, my first essay for composition class, and I just waited to get an A++. I'd been writing, you know, I thought that was my skill set, you know, I thought that's where I shined. And then this teacher, who I ended up loving, I think I got a, I'm pretty sure I got a C on that essay. And it was pretty devastating. And I just really, you know, but he taught me how to write. So I am very indebted to him. And so that was, but that was the beginning. And then 2 years into college, at the end of my second year, so I did, I took creative writing classes and, you know, throughout. And at the end of the second year, I entered, Barnard had a college-wide competition. And I entered a couple of pieces in that competition, a writing competition. And I got an honorable mention, which for a sophomore was terrific. So I was really happy and proceeded immediately to drop out of college to write The Great American Novel. I thought, okay, I don't need this. I don't need an education. And so, but of course, you know, I was about 19 at the time, and my novel will be released in July, which, you know, I'm not sure exactly when this is going to run, but I think it'll be out already. And so, and I'm 57. So it took me that many years to produce a debut novel. And part of the issue was that I did lose sight of my dream along the way. You know, ultimately, I went back to school at a different school, and I graduated and went to law school and became a lawyer. And the dream of becoming a writer got kind of shoved to the side. I wouldn't say it got completely lost, because it was always in the back of my mind that at some point I will go back to writing. And what happened to make me finally go back to writing, this is a little bit sad, was my mother died suddenly. And it was one of the hardest things that's ever happened in my life, but it also contained a lesson. And the lesson that it contained was that you really don't know how much time you have. If you think I'm going to do something, you know, if there's something important to you and you say, oh, I'm going to do it later, you don't know that you have a later. And so if you want to do it, you better start doing it. And so, shortly after that, I started writing with a regular writing practice and writing every day. So, yeah, that's how I finally ended up becoming a writer.
Well, this leads me to a question that there may not be a good answer to, but do you feel like, you know, this point in your life where you're releasing your debut novel, do you feel like that you would have been prepared to write this book or, you know, a similar book earlier in life? Or, you know, is it a culmination of the experiences that you've gathered? Obviously it is. But, you know, that it's different for different people. People come to it when they're ready, it seems to be. Do you feel like that you were prepared for this moment earlier in life, or is this the moment for you?
That's a great point. You know, I might have been able to write something else earlier because, you know, we've all had different life experiences. They are cumulative, and, you know, maybe we can gain a tiny bit of wisdom through those experiences. And I definitely could not have written this book. I don't think I would have had as much knowledge of human nature to draw on, and I think that's key for a writer.
Sure.
So I definitely think as you get older and have more experiences, that knowledge grows, and so you definitely have more material to draw on. So it was, I don't want to say easier, because writing a novel was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yes.
There's nothing easy about it.
Right.
So I don't want to say easier, but there was definitely more material to draw on and in order to write it, which is, of course, is part of the process. So.
Right. Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's Noveler.org.
I want to go back and touch on for just a minute that teacher that you had when you turned in the paper that you just knew was going to be an A++, but it turned out to be a C. What did you learn from that teacher, and what do you think was in that first experience where you were convinced it was epic? He was convinced that it was good, but needed some work. What did you learn from that experience? Yeah.
If I remember correctly, and I this is a long time ago for me, you have to realize. So, but if I remember a little bit about it, I think it was either an essay or a story or about this would be crazy, but something about a kid wanting to go into a candy store, maybe not having the money, and I think it was he found it very trite and cliched, and once he said that. You know, that the ideas weren't new, that these were ideas that had been written about a lot, and maybe it would be worth going beyond them to try to have, to say something new, rather than to write your first thought. I came upon this lesson, again, I took a class with Rebecca Mackay, it was a fiction workshop, and she really stressed that to the whole class. That your first thought is probably not your best thought. And I thought that was so true. And I think our first thoughts are often cliches. That's certainly true when we try to describe something, right? Whether it's we're describing a person or whether we're describing an emotion, our first thought are the descriptions we've read 100 times. They're just embedded in our mind. And sometimes our second thoughts are cliches too. And so I think if you can keep working and recognize those cliches and try to come to something a little more original, a little more something that maybe only you could observe or have observed about that emotion or about that description, it makes your writing a lot fresher.
I've had an experience like that where you have an idea. It's an epiphany, really. This seems to be the perfect metaphor for the existential crisis to end all crises. But you could scratch a little deeper if you know, some things just need some more work. Not that you're not onto something, but you know, it needs to be a little more work done. I could definitely see that. You also, before the novel, have released a collection of short stories and have had short stories published in various places. What do you feel like the form of the short story offers that novel writing doesn't offer, now that you've done both? Why do you like the short story format, and what does it do for you?
So they're so different. In the short story, the idea is compression, of course, and you're just laser focused on one theme, I think, and one idea, and maybe one or two characters, and certainly one arc, and so there's an intensity about it. It's almost like holding your breath and swimming across the pool and back, there's really an intensity about it. With the novel, there's much more room. There's more room for more characters. There's more room for more plots and subplots, for more themes. There's a spaciousness about it. And I have to say, I like it. I think short stories, I like both forms. I'll continue to write both forms. But maybe I like the challenge of the novel too. You know, the novel, you can't hold the whole novel in your head. People have said that before, and I found that to be true. And so that's a challenge in and of itself. You know, maybe you solve that problem a little bit with outlining, you know, but it's interesting to try to work on a project that you can't hold in your head all at once and to figure out how you're going to knit it together in a way that's cohesive and so that it feels seamless. So I find them different and to present different challenges. But I like them both. I like reading them both. I like writing them both. And I think I'll continue to create both.
Do you feel like as readers, we should approach the short story differently than we do the novel, or should there not be any onus on the reader to, you know, prepare for what the type is?
I think of the latter. I think the latter. I mean, the only thing I would say is, I think sometimes readers are reluctant to pick up collections. And if I were going to guess one reason why, I would say it's because you read a story, just when you learn the world, it ends. And then you have to learn a new world. And there's a little bit of extra work that goes into that beginning a new story again, rather than starting a new chapter where the world is the same, the characters are the same. And so I do think the story or a collection of stories puts a little more work on a reader, and I would hope they'd be willing to do it because you do get something different in terms of that intensity, I think. Yeah, that would be the only difference in approach I would think a reader might want to take, is just to be open to that new world and to be starting again some 25 pages in to that collection.
The name of this short story collection is We Love Anderson Cooper. What's behind that title?
What's behind it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that story, that's the first story in the collection. And it's about a young man who decides he's going to come out to his family and his community about being gay at his bar mitzvah, when he's giving his bar mitzvah speech. And so he does it. You know, he comes out during his bar mitzvah speech, and it's a disaster. You know, you have to read the story, but it's a complete disaster. And then his parents are driving him home, and his mother turns around and says, "Why didn't you tell us? You know, we would have understood. We love Anderson Cooper." So that's the story. That's the story behind the story. Yeah, behind the title.
I love that. So you've written numerous pieces of short fiction, had success getting this published, put together a collection. What drew you to the story that eventually became Other People's Pets, your new novel?
Wow. There's a couple of threads that come from my life, even though, of course, you know, as a fiction writer, when you take material from your life, at least in my case, and I can't speak for all fiction writers, but when I take material from my life, I change it a lot. And that was so true in Other People's Pets. But the things that came that had seeds in my life, one of the threads in Other People's Pets is that the main character, Lala, has been abandoned by her mother when she's 8. And while I wasn't abandoned by a parent, my father would disappear, or he did kind of abandon us, not in the way that Lala was abandoned, but he would disappear for weeks and months at a time, and we would not know where he was going. And that was very hard. It was very traumatic, and I experienced it as a loss. And I developed kind of a fear of abandonment in later life with boyfriends. Like I could have a boyfriend. I remember this actually. A boyfriend was supposed to meet me probably at a Subway restaurant. And I think he was literally 3 minutes late, and I burst into tears. So that, you know, I'm a little better now, but it was that fear of abandonment coming out. But I do still think I struggle with that a little. So I wanted to explore that fear of abandonment in a character. Now, of course, in the novel, it's her mother, not her father. And it's a much more complete abandonment than I ever experienced. But I did want to investigate, what did it mean to her? What would it mean to her as a child? And what would it mean to her as an adult? So that was one of the threads that I experienced. The other, well, so the book is about this woman who's a burglar and her father who's a burglar. And my house was burglarized a number of times when I was a child. And one time when I was in it. So it was Saturday night, and I was in it, and the only other person in the house was my friend. I think she might have stayed over my house for the weekend. And we were about 12 years old, I think. And we heard someone come in the house, and I thought it might be my dad coming home from one of those extended absences. And he wasn't the type to yell, "Honey, I'm home." You know, he'd just come in. And so I yelled out, "Hi, Dad." I heard someone coming up the stairs. And I yelled, "Hi, Dad." And I heard, "Oh, shit, there's somebody here."
Oh, no.
And then I heard, you know, I think someone running down the stairs. But my friend and I, we ran into my parents' room, which was empty, but that was the only room with a lock. And it had a phone. So we locked the door, and I called 911. And then as we waited for the police, I was screaming, "The police are coming, the police are coming," for like 5 minutes. And then the police came, and the burglars had left. They really didn't want to encounter people. They wanted to rob an empty house. And so I guess there were no cars in the driveway, and they came to that conclusion. So I think, the house was burglarized other times also. And so I think that's another, those kind of childhood experiences were something that I wanted to explore in the book. But I did think it would be so much more interesting to write it from the point of view of burglars rather than from the point of view of victims.
Yes.
I always think you have to be a little careful in a book if someone is a victim. I mean, obviously Lala is somewhat of a victim because her mother left her, so she's been abandoned. So the last thing I wanted to do was kind of maybe make her a victim in another way, big way. And so by making her the burglar, she's active, you know, she's active and doing things. And but of course, once you decide to make characters burglars, then you have another problem. And that problem is, well, you want the reader to want to follow these characters around. You want them to be able to love them a little bit, even if they hate them a little bit. And so I knew to make these round characters. And with Lala, of course, her love of animals helps to do that, and her care for animals helps to do that. And even with Zev, his love of Lala and his sticking with Lala and taking care of her helps to do that. And then last, you have the animal empath theme. Now, I'm not an animal empath, but I do love animals. I like working, you know, I've been in shelters and helped out in shelters, scooping poop and walking dogs and matching people with good dogs for them to adopt. And I have adopted myself lots of dogs and cats. And I'm also a vegan, so I'm also a little bit tuned into the pain that humans sometimes impose on animals and create for animals, whether it's destroying their habitat or whether it's just neglecting them or maybe, you know, in all kinds of ways we do sometimes create suffering for animals. And so I'm not an animal empath. I don't, you know, but I thought it would be interesting to create an animal empath and to imagine what life would be like for her, for Lala, wandering around the world and feeling all the pain that we've created for these animals. I just thought that would be a really interesting exercise in imagination for both me and then ultimately for the reader.
There's another interesting theme that you explore in the book, and I'm interested to hear if it's intentional or if it just came out. And that's the idea of nature versus nurture. And, you know, Lala is in veterinary school, and, you know, she has this past with her father, and she's trying to work past that, but then her father gets in trouble and she goes right back to her previous life to try to get her dad out of trouble. So she goes from veterinary school to breaking into houses again. And was that something you were thinking about? You know, what makes us do the things that we do? And you know, are we destined to be a certain way? Can we be better than we thought we were? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I was definitely thinking about that. I was definitely thinking about, are we stuck with what what happens to us during our childhoods. Absolutely. Both in terms of her abandonment and also absolutely she's raised to be a burglar. And so the question is, will she be able to overcome that and move past that to have a kind of a full, meaningful life, especially since she does have this talent of being an animal empath, and it's perfect for her to go to veterinary school. What could be more perfect than for her to become a veterinarian? So I definitely was exploring that because I think that's such a big, it's such a big question that we all have is, am I going to become my mother? Am I going to become my father? You know, am I, if I was raised without certain skills, will I ever be able to social skills, you know, will I ever be able to learn them? Even in terms of where we get love, you know, am I stuck getting love from a family that maybe can't give it in the way that I want them to? Or can we create families as adults of friends and other people, you know, who nurture us? So that was a huge question in the book that I enjoyed exploring and answering and, you know, in a way that obviously readers can find out.
Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writers community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.
One thing that I love about the book is, you know, how you can go very deep on a subject, and also there's a level of humor that comes out in the book that's kind of wry and, you know, kind of subversive in some ways. Could you talk a little about the role of humor, you know, in the midst of you know, sometimes a story that's not, you know, a comedy, but the humor that's in life and that surrounds us and how that's an important emotion on top of the deeper emotions that we think about.
Thank you so much for saying that. I try so hard. That's why I'm saying that is because it's so intentional. And I try so hard to put levity in the book, to break it up for the reader so that it's not all heavy. It's not even all suspense and worrying about the characters and what's going to happen to them and are they going to survive the journey they've embarked on. And I love reading books that have humor in them. When I was growing up, one of my favorite writers, and she was a playwright, was Wendy Wasserstein, you know, and she would totally do that. She would write plays that you would just be laughing on the floor one minute and just weeping the next day, that she could change up from those heavy emotions that are also cathartic, right? But I think laughter is also cathartic. And so I think that laughter and humor and comedy have a role in almost any story. I don't want to say any story. You know, I'm sure there are some stories where it doesn't have a role or that just have to be completely serious. But, you know, if you're writing about burglars and you're writing about animal empaths, then certainly you can find room, I hope, for humor. And I think it's just, you know, I know as a reader, it's such a blessing. I mean, those are the paragraphs that I nudge my husband, you know, and I say, oh, you got to listen to this. And then I, you know, I read them aloud to him so I can laugh a second time. So I just I love reading it. I love writing it. It's also a gift from the heavens to write it because it's one of these things you can't force it. You just have to be ready to receive the gift. You just have to be at your desk enough and working and willing to edit enough and willing to be aware of it and include it, even though it's risky. Because obviously, the joke can always fall flat, right?
Right.
And so that's always a risk that you take to try to write funny and not to be funny. But of course, you always can edit. I mean, this is one of the things about writing that's so wonderful is that, you know, as opposed to live podcasts, you can edit. You know, you can if it doesn't work, just delete it. Start again.
Right.
So there's really room for humor in writing.
Absolutely. Speaking of editing podcasts, bear with me one second, please. Sorry, I had to sneeze.
No way.
Do you consider yourself a pantser or a plotter, to kind of dig into some of the writer lingo here? Do you write by the seat of your pants, or do you have a plan when you begin a novel?
Okay, so I'll go back to the short stories for a second. Short stories, so how I learned how to write, pure pantser. Just draft after draft of pantsing, which you can do because you can hold the whole story in your mind.
Right.
And I like writing character-based stories and novels. And so I'm just listening and listening and listening to what the characters want to do and want to say. And then transcribing. So that's the story. I try to do that with a novel because that's how I write. And so the first draft was definitely me telling myself the story. With no outline, no anything, no idea of where it would end up, what characters would do, what they would say, what the book would look like, none. And so I wrote a complete draft, and what a mess it was. I mean, I'm not sorry. I mean, I had to start somewhere, but what a mess. I mean, just enormous plot holes, just character arcs that never worked. I mean, because remember, you're writing probably a couple of different character arcs, a couple of different storylines. You want them in some way to come together. And so it really was a big mess. So I have a teacher, and she works as a developmental editor, and I hired her to look at this draft. And to be honest, I didn't realize how terrible it was, So once again, I was going to, I was showing it to her. I did know it was a first draft, so I wasn't waiting for an A on this one, but I did, I was waiting, and she sent me a 25-page single space critique.
Holy crap.
I know, but I tell you, it was so wonderful. I mean, she taught me how to write a novel. Now, she didn't solve any of the problems, but she raised them.
Right.
And explained to me what would ultimately have to happen in any novel for it to work. And so from there, and she also did say, you need to write an outline and you need to try to solve some of these problems in an outline because it'll be too hard otherwise. And I agreed with her. So at that point, I became a plotter and I wrote an outline from the bad draft that I had. And then I went back and wrote draft two. And so, but I was a hybrid plotter and pantser because I constantly strayed from the outline. Because again, I write character driven stories and novels. So I am constantly listening. So it doesn't matter what I said I wanted to happen on the outline. If the character doesn't want to do it, or if it's no longer true to the character because of something I discovered in the prior chapter, then I'm not going to write it. I'm going to change it up. And then I would revise the outline. So it was a constant going back and forth between writing the novel and revising it and also revising the outline. But the outline was a fantastic tool for problem solving. If I did have a plot hole, or if I didn't know how I was just going to get from A to B or X to Y, or I could just think a little more rationally about it on the outline and even problem solve it a little bit, come up with a couple of different solutions, pick the one that I like, and then go back to the novel and write. And also, had the outline to look at so that you could see a better picture of the whole book, which you just can't do with a 300-page book. I've just dipped my toe in a new novel, and I won't say much about it, but I will say that I'm starting as a pantser again. So I expect to have a terrible first draft again, which is fine.
And I think that's a fantastic way to look at it, because outlining is a lot easier when you have characters that are sort of fleshed out and you understand their motivations and you can sort of predict what they're going to do. Even if they took a wrong turn in the first draft, you kind of understand these characters, and it's a whole lot easier to draft an outline for them when there's so much that you've already figured out in the first draft. Because the first draft is not perfect. That's not its purpose. But But yeah, the outlining has to be so much easier after that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the new book is Other People's Pets, and when you're hearing this episode, it's on sale today everywhere. You know, if your bookstore is still closed because of quarantine, it's available on Amazon, of course, and there's links to it in the show notes. RL, this has been so much fun chatting. If people are just learning about you and want to dig into all the great stuff that you do, where can they find you online?
So one of the best places to find me online is my website, and that's rlmazis.com. And then I'm on Twitter, and that's at @RL_Mazis. And then I'm on Instagram at @R_L_Mazis. I don't know why I chose that, but there it is. And so, yeah, so they can find me online for sure.
We'll put links to all those in the show notes to make it easy for people to find you. RL, this has been so much fun chatting. Congratulations on the new book, and we're going to promote it everywhere.
Thank you so much for this discussion. It's been a blast, and for just you know, telling people about the book, especially now during the pandemic when it's a little harder to get the word out. And so really, really appreciate it.
World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world-building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 250,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert, and I know you will be too.